Hi, it's Bob from Royal Spa. Soaking in a hot tub full of Epsom salts is the absolute best way to minimize everyday aches and pains. And we know all about Epsom salts at Royal Spa. Royal Spa hot tubs are the only hot tubs on the market that can safely and effectively use Epsom salts. Made right here in Indiana, Royal Spa hot tubs are the highest quality hot tubs on the market. Visit any one of our three Indianapolis locations or visit royalspa.com.
Ah, Royal Spa.
1 o'clock hour underway in Indianapolis. For that matter, the 1 o'clock hour is underway everywhere in the Eastern time zone. Monday, by the way, I don't know if you guys have seen this yet, and I did not realize this aspect of it. I knew that this was going to be a big deal on Monday when we're going to be at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway for the world ending. But did you know that the whole world is coming to Indianapolis? Literally?
I was aware of that, yes. Believe it or not, I had heard.
And I guess like there's worries about traffic or whatever, because like, are people just going to pull over on the side of the road and just get out and sit on the hood of their car?
Speaking of that, not to fully derail the conversation, but I'm going to do it anyway. What is up with people at Indy International now just pulling on the side of the road waiting for people instead of using the cell phone lot?
Okay,
what are we doing?
Which leads to my other question just in front of Nate Atkins. Explain this to me. And I agree with that. But at the same time, why does the cell phone lot have handicapped parking spots?
Great question.
The entire purpose of the cell phone lot, it is a lot where you have no purpose of getting out of your car. You sit in your car to wait until people get off their flight, and then you drive.
You know what it probably is? In the event of an emergency. In the event of an emergency, it's important to have that handicap spot.
Every second
matters, Jake.
That's right. I've never understood that. Like, it's closer proximity to what? I mean, I'm all for
a ditch.
Don't
a ditch
get me wrong.
If there's a tornado.
I'm all for parking for the spots for the disabled. I mean, I'm all for that.
Right.
But I'm like, but the whole point of this parking lot is that it doesn't have
it's
access
so
to anything.
So grandma gets to the grocery closer.
I guess
that type of spot. I don't know what
what
its surface
it's for
is for the cell phone lot.
Passenger, like someone coming.
But they can't walk there. They can't walk to the cell phone lot.
Yeah, the cell phone lot's parked like a half a mile away, and the entire purpose of it is for you to sit in your car until you get the message that someone's plane has landed.
What if somebody wanted to walk that?
They'd have to walk across the runways, Eddie, yep. Which I think is probably a bigger concern.
They have VIP, certainly. I'm sure they'll let you do it.
Anyway, stop pulling
when
off
you're
on the side of the ramp.
When you're in a wheelchair.
If they want to walk there, then it's for the disabled,
yeah.
The parking spot. So yeah. You're saying, what if they want to walk?
Yeah, and they're pushing someone in a wheelchair.
Stop pulling off on the side of the road. Go to the cell phone lot.
Folks, we're going to be a little bit delayed here taking off. Get somebody walk into the cell phone lot.
Speaking of delays.
Nate Atkins joins us now, and I'm sure thrilled to be doing so, from the Indianapolis Star. He's got an interesting column how Joe Flacco's unwavering confidence made him a match with Shane Steichen and the Colts. Nate, thrilled to be joining this conversation, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. You know, I've not thought about cell phone lots in a little bit, so this was actually pretty enlightening.
Well, here's the thing, and be honest with me, Nate. I mean, you're a sharp guy, right? And you're obviously more intellectual than I, but when I mentioned that about the handicap spots in the cell phone lot, and be honest, deep down you thought to yourself, you know, I'd never thought of that, but that's a brilliant observation. Did you not?
I absolutely thought that, which I often do when you go on these tangents, because they're very rarely things that I've thought through, but they are.
Thank you.
Yeah, I have not thought about the handicap spots in the cell phone lobby. You make a great argument.
Nate, when it comes to these points, I have an unwavering confidence in my abilities, which I guess makes me similar to Joe Flacco, right?
Yeah.
Take me through just the Joe Flacco signing. How much of this was because they feel like he can really help and mentor a young quarterback in Anthony Richardson, and how much of it was because they thought in spot moments he is a guy that can win them games?
I would say it's a little more the second than the first, but both are certainly in play here. So Anthony only got four games last year, basically, parts of four games. So they don't look at him as a rookie quarterback. They thought it was important for him to sit and learn and watch Gardner and kind of be in an NFL building and all of that. But they also understand he's not an established passer yet. And they were just starting to get to some of the more explosive levels of their playbook. In that Rams game is when it really, really opened up, when they got down 23-0. And they were so excited about diving more into that. And then he gets hurt early in the very next game against the Titans. And so they want to build that offense out and really take the next step. And part of that is having a backup quarterback out here who's run offenses like that his whole life. Joe Flacco started like 185 games in this league, and won a Super Bowl. So it is a great person to learn from in the room and have him talk through these concepts and what you're looking for and how to look off safeties and all the other things that Anthony hasn't really gotten to because he's only started 17 games above high school. But they also realize that there is an injury risk with Anthony Richardson, not just because he's been hurt or coming off the injury, but just his playing style and the fact that they want to use that quarterback run game. They don't want to live in their fears and just ditch the quarterback run just to ensure that he never gets hit at all. But within that, they want to be able to, if they end up losing him for any amount of time. And the thing about it is, I think people think about the injury risk as a very all or nothing. Like he's either going to be out there the full season or not at all. What often happens with mobile quarterbacks is they miss a couple games, even when they're pretty durable. That's happened with Jalen Hurts. That's happened with Lamar Jackson. That's happened with Justin Fields. And so if you're in a situation like that where you know, maybe a good scenario would be you get 15 starts out of Anthony Richardson in the regular season, there's a couple games there where you don't want to change the passing part of the playbook, which is explosive and aggressive down the field. That's Joe Flacco's game. That's what he stepped in and did last season as the comeback player of the year for the Browns. And he's in that way, unwavering confidence I talk about. That's feeding that play style for him, that he's going to just keep being that guy. He's not going to change the way he's playing. And until there's an injury to him, they have a belief that he'll be able to keep doing that. So Joe is interesting. Talk about the mentor-mentee relationship. He doesn't see it as much. He thinks that's been made a bigger deal on the outside, that it's more of a learning by osmosis of being in the same room and working at the same position. But he very much is prepared to step in and play and play at a high level like he did last year. And, in the course of competing and going and competing in practice, I should say, and working through these things, I think they hope that Anthony will learn a lot from him, too.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Nate Atkins is our guest, Colts beat writer for the Indy Star. Nate, I will, give a confession here. I don't follow every single Colts player on social media. I find it tiring at times because you have so many cryptic tweets throughout an off season that it's better off just to stay away and just read reactions and read the long form stuff. So shout out to you for retweeting a couple Colts players that have thrown me off a ledge in terms of my further frustration with what happened today, which is the big story of the Houston Texans going to acquire Stephon Diggs and adding another weapon to their budding franchise quarterback in what is clearly a we're ready to take a next step type of move. You were active on Twitter as well today. You can follow Nate on Twitter at @NateAtkins_. Somebody basically asked you why it feels like the Colts are never making winning moves. You alluded to the fact that you asked Chris Ballard point blank why it feels like every other team with a quarterback, a rookie quarterback from last year, is doing things one way, I would argue the right way, helping arm that rookie quarterback with good talent, and the Colts are doing something else. That piece will be up tomorrow, as you said, on the Indy Star, but can you reveal a little bit to us of what it is, the something else that the Colts are doing instead of, in my mind, helping arm Anthony Richardson with playmakers?
Yeah, well, first off, it's funny that you mentioned cryptic tweets and then ask about Stephon Diggs, because I think that has a lot to do with why he got traded in the first place and why the Bills are eating so much dead cap money to move off of a star receiver. So we'll see how that plays out. It's certainly a super aggressive move from the Texans, and that sort of played out in this offseason for all three teams in the division, which are in this spot of quarterback on a rookie deal who's not a rookie, quarterbacks they believe in or want to believe in at least, and they're going for it. And the Jaguars added Eric Armstead. The Titans went out and got L'Jarius Sneed and Calvin Ridley. And then the Texans have added Stephon Diggs and Danielle Hunter. And the Colts were in on one of those players. So it's not as if they have not tried for it. They were in on Danielle Hunter. It didn't quite come together. And this is sort of so I did pose it that way to Chris Ballard, where I just said, I understand your kind of basic operating procedure is to bring back your guys. There's reason to believe in those guys. But every other team that's in this spot still goes and looks to outside additions to both improve the team, also because they can. They just can flat out afford it like the Colts can. And yeah, I'll get into the, there's a lot of different factors that go into why they do free agency the way they do. You know, that I'll get into tomorrow in the story. But basically, his kind of counter to that is that people are making a big deal about spending just on the outside rather than the spending you're doing to retain your own free agents, but also that you need to factor in the players lost in the course of this. And so, for an example, you know, the Texans lost Jonathan Greenard and then went out and got Daniil Hunter, which is an upgrade, but not, it's not like they just put him opposite Jonathan Greenard. The Jaguars, you know, lost Calvin Ridley in the process of adding Eric Armstead. The Colts so far have brought back everybody, every starter that they had heading into free agency, but it is absolutely still true that these other teams are finding ways to either bring back a lot of those players or go out and get new ones. Even teams that didn't have, you know, that had some of the tendencies of the Colts. The Bengals used to never do free agency, and then Joe Burrow changed that, and they went out and they got guys like Trey Hendrickson and Von Bell, and it got them to a Super Bowl. And so that is really the question that the Colts are wrestling with, and they're in this interesting spot, kind of weird spot, honestly, where it feels like part of why they're rolling back their team so much is that they believe in Anthony Richardson and Jonathan Taylor and what those two can be together, and that those two will be the lift that they didn't have. That's how they can get better from 9-8, is those two being on the field together, which they weren't basically at all last season outside of two snaps. But at the same time, until they actually see that play out and they see it the way that the Jaguars have seen Trevor Lawrence cook, the way that the Texans just saw C.J. Stroud take them to the playoffs, until they actually see it that way, I don't know that they want to make this the offseason where they spend all that cash in free agency, go out and get the outside additions. They still are going to take a long-term approach to this thing where they have Anthony Richardson on 4 years of a rookie deal before a fifth-year option. And so, yeah, they're kind of slow playing it. It's just kind of the way Chris Ballard operates, and I should point out the way that Jim Irsay's franchise operates, because it is two of them kind of tied in this, where it's one guy who is picking the players to spend the money on, and the other one is writing the checks. And I don't want that to get lost in all this either.
Nate, how much do you think, just by human nature, Nate Atkins is our guest from the Indianapolis Star who covers the Colts. How much do you think by human nature the Colts in the offseason make or even hold off on moves in a reactionary sense to what their conference opponents are doing?
I don't think it plays into what they do very much, honestly. I think it can.
Do you think there are, I would agree with you, but let me ask you this. I guess I should have asked it this way. Do you think there are franchises that do, or is that strictly Colts, like NFL fan, armchair quarterback stuff?
No, I think it's something more for the other teams around the league. You know, free agency is often the time that GMs will often say is you go to the draft for your premium talent, and that's why they pick best player available. You got a free agency to fill your needs. When you have a big hole in your roster and you're like, we need this now and we can't risk a rookie coming in and not being able to do it. Free agency, I think, is often a place where you find answers to the problems that are right in front of you, which can be in your division. I think you'll see that with some of the moves that teams in Patrick Mahomes' division or in Lamar Jackson's division will do as far as loading up on certain types of defensive players, often at the premium positions. If you kind of look at like the AFC North is a good example of teams there just consistently are going after high-end cornerbacks and defensive ends because they're in a division with Joe Burrow and Lamar Jackson, and that's a little bit more of the counter to that when you don't have, you know, if you're the Browns or the Steelers, you don't have that caliber of quarterback. Your counter is like, how do we find a way to defend them and live with that? Chris Ballard, I think that it plays into the Colts a little bit in terms of maybe how they stack the draft board, but they don't tend to go into free agency to plug holes that way. They want to just draft and develop their guys in order to do that. And also Chris Ballard's just his operating procedure is to not react much to really anything that's going on throughout the league. He's fighting against overreacting, and so he doesn't want this to be anything where, like, you know, one team makes this move, he's got to go and find a counter. And I, you know, and then that leaves the fans' frustration because they want that. But But, you know, Chris Ballard forever has operated from a place of patience, and he's still doing that.
Nate, at what point does it change from that's Chris Ballard's philosophy to what Chris Ballard is doing is wrong? Because I feel like we're having this push back and forth every year of why is he not aggressive? Why does he not take the swings? Why is everything done for the most part internally and through the draft? And look, we've given him credit before. Part of the reason I thought maybe they'd make a move for Legarius Sneed via the trade market was because they did it with DeForest Buckner, probably his most significant move outside of drafting Anthony Richardson that he's done from a bringing talent outside of West 56 into the building. And that deserves credit, but that was a move that was 4 years ago. So at what point is the idea of his practicing patience, at what point does that wear thin where it's not that's the way Chris does things, it changes into that's the wrong way to go about doing things?
Yeah, I think that's where, as they say, over time you are what your record says you are. And so Chris Ballard is going to have to live with the results of how he's produced as a general manager. So far it has produced one playoff victory. For a while here, there has been a bit of a leash that he's deserved, and the whole franchise has, as far as just what the Andrew Luck retirement, you know, put them into, and then just some of the difficulty of fixing that quarterback position, which he took a terrible swing on. They all did on Carson Wentz, but outside of that one, you know, there is an understanding that there haven't been a lot of great options until last year when they went up and got Anthony Richardson. And so now we are seeing them in a place of having a quarterback again with a ton of talent that they believe a lot in, and now he's on a rookie deal. So we're getting to that point where the excuses are not really going to work for this franchise. And I'll lump them all together in there because I know this is Chris Ballard is kind of the front-facing person for all these offseason moves. But I do sense that this is collaborative between him and Shane Steichen, who, by the way, has consistently preached continuity all offseason. That, I think, is playing into this a little bit. And then, like I mentioned, Jim Irsay, who's the one who can write the checks and be the one who funds some of these things. Owners do play a role in this in this time of year. So they're all kind of in this together where they're trying to do this draft and develop and stay patient and stay believing in what you have and what you can build internally. And, yeah, we're really going to find out here soon what, you know, what the results are of that. So far, between, you know, the Andrew Luck retirement and then last year Anthony Richardson not being healthy as a rookie quarterback, there has been some context that's very important that gives him a little bit of grace. But the time for that's going to run out, you know, in the next year or two, because, you know, they're in this window, they're in this division where all teams are facing the same dilemma of how do we go and chase a Super Bowl ceiling and a loaded AFC with these monster quarterbacks. When our quarterback's on a rookie deal, and we got to get him to his ceiling and build around him. You know, they're playing with the same game as the other three teams in the division. And at some point, you know, they're going to be judged by how they stack up within that division, within the AFC. And yeah, we'll learn very quickly whether his approach is the right one or whether it's a little outdated, like I know a lot of fans think right now.
Hey, Nate, I don't know if you know this or not, but are you aware of the defensive backs and nickels coach at Ball State University, football coach?
I believe he has my same name, right?
That's correct, yeah. Nate Atkins is the defensive backs coach at Ball State. Have you ever gotten any sort of recruiting scoop or anything from errant emails?
I have not. I have his dad emailed me one time years ago just to say, hey, you have a cool name.
Oh, I thought his dad emailed like, hey, mom's wanting you to come over for Thanksgiving. What time are you going to be here?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. He actually didn't mistake me. But, yeah, I've gotten that one. And then there's a Nate Atkins who plays tight end for the Broncos. And so when people are either happy with him or mad with him, I'll get tweets on that. For a long time, I had no idea what it was about. They just would tell me, like, you suck, and it would just tweet at me.
Well, you're used to that, right?
Yeah, I mean, so I guess, okay, I didn't know what I did now. But then I realized, you know, they were South Carolina fans, now they're Broncos fans. And so, you know, and then when he makes big plays, you know, then all of a sudden I look really
good. You're the greatest, right? Yeah. Hey, where are we right now in terms of Anthony Richardson's, to your understanding, just his rehabilitation? I know that he's throwing, right? We mentioned a couple weeks ago on the show, he's swinging a club around Topgolf, so I would assume that everything's good to go. But everything according to plan, right?
Yep, everything according to plan. He was cleared to throw. Would have been late February is when he first kind of started. He went down to Jacksonville at the Six Points facility where he trains. That's where he trained last year where Gardner Minshew trains. He's been throwing in the indoor facility. He's been throwing at different places throughout Indianapolis. He's been throwing with his receivers too. So he's out there doing the thing. They're expecting him to be full go by the time they get into organized training activities, which I believe the offseason program is going to start in a couple weeks, and then their first practice for that is a few weeks after that. So they're expecting it to be full go, full range of motion, full strength back in the shoulder. It took a while they really were pumping the brakes on him because he really wanted to get back so soon, but they just knew that there's nothing to get back for yet until you get closer to the spring. So he's fully cleared. He seems to be in great spirits about it too. And they're all excited to get him back and see what he can do.
Nate, what high school did you attend? One of my favorite things to do on the show is to look up people's high schools and who's famous from their high school. What high school did you attend?
I attended Ashland High School, Ashland, Ohio.
Ashland, Ohio High School. Okay. And their mascot is what?
The Arrows.
Oh, okay. Well, that's, let's see. Ashland High School. Do they have, here's the Wikipedia page. Okay. Josh Packard, the principal. Did you know Josh?
Yep. He was a guidance counselor when I was there.
Okay. Oh, the mascot is Ari the Arrow. Do you know anybody? Do you know who played Ari or Ari? Ari the Arrow. Do you know him?
I didn't. We didn't really have. He wasn't really a thing when I was there.
Okay. There are.
Unfortunately, we should have.
Four notable alumni listed here. Five actually now. Would you like to guess any of the notable alumni from Ashland High School?
I know one of them is Tim Cedar.
That's correct, yeah. Former NFL player with the Dallas Cowboys and Jags, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. I'm not going to be good guessing these other ones.
Robert Springer, who's a NASA astronaut.
Yeah, okay.
Went into space and clearly made the alumni proud. Okay, John Roseborough, former major league player for the Dodgers, Twins, and Senators. So I'm guessing a long time ago. Ernest Cline, a novelist and screenwriter. Are you familiar with him?
I know the name, yeah.
Okay, and then lastly, Nate Atkins, tight end Denver Broncos. That appears to be a confusion, right?
Yeah, a little bit, but like I said, I'm not gonna turn down that praise.
Wait,
I play in the NFL.
Did you have a fellow that ran around as Ari? Like, did somebody dress up like Ari the Arrow?
No, actually, we didn't. I don't know why. Actually, we had a pretty raucous student section. We were really good at football, and I don't know. We did not do the mascot.
You know why there were no students to be Ari the Arrow? Don't you? Ari the Arrow? Don't you?
Why is that?
Well, they all lack direction.
I like that.
The Lexington Minutemen, the newspaper. So you were right near the Mid Ohio Sports Car Course, right?
Yep.
All right. Over there by the Mansfield Reformatory, where Nate, these two guys have never seen Shawshank Redemption, which was filmed in Mansfield right near you, right?
It was, and actually some of the scenes were filmed in Ashland at the Malabar Farm. So, that's one of our claim to fame. And if you have not seen that movie, you should fix that. It's really good.
Exactly. See, I've been telling these guys that forever.
Nate, I'll end on a positive note in that regard before we get swallowed in our ignorance on Shawshank. Congratulations on winning 2023 Associated Press Division B Beat Writer of the Year. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you very much. Appreciate that.
It should get you in the notable alumni of Ashland High School. We are letting them know on the Facebook, on the Wikipedia
page. Not as
page.
Cool as being a tight end for the Broncos, though, so I'm still going to ride that one.
That's true. Nate, we appreciate it, man.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Somebody just asked me a very good question, and that is, have the NIT and NCAA champion ever come from the same state in the same year? I'm not saying it hasn't been done more than just this, but in a quick glance down through the years, in 1962, Dayton won the NIT and Cincinnati won the NCAA. There might be years, others before. I believe that's the last time that it took place.
At least one time. So there you go.
Correct.
Yeah.
And, in 1979, Indiana won the NIT over Purdue, and Indiana State, of course, lost the national championship game. So they had a chance there, but we shall see if that takes place this year. Joining us now on the program, had a chance to talk to him briefly before the Pacers' last home game against the Brooklyn Nets, and they now are out in New York to take on the Nets for round two of that, not back-to-back, but back-to-back games, I guess, for them. Chris Denary, the television voice from Bally Sports and the Indiana Pacers, joins us. Chris, pretty strong performance from the Pacers in terms of the home game against the Nets. Was Brooklyn in any way, shape, or form shorthanded in that matchup, or was that just simply Indiana playing about as well as they could play against them?
They had one guy missing, but a bench player in Cam Johnson. But for the most part, Brooklyn had who they've had since the trade deadline. I thought Indiana played very, very well. I mean, it was a 4-0 start, and then Pacers scored 15 straight, scored 43 in the first quarter. I just thought they went about the business how you would want them to do against a team that, you know, is lottery bound, has some talent. I mean, Mikal Bridges, they've got a number of talented players. But it'll be a little bit different tonight because I would think you'll get a better shot from Brooklyn on their home floor. And the Pacers will have to be ready for that. But I think they know what's at stake. I mean, they've got a half-game lead over Miami with a big game against Miami looming on Sunday for the final playoff spot to stay out of the play-in. You've still got Philadelphia lurking around, and now Joel Embiid is back. So all of these games really, Jake, are playoff games. Six games to go, and you've got to try to take care of business, and you get another shot at the Nets tonight.
Now, Chris, I thought one of the real storylines, obviously, in the Nets game the other night was, you know, Tyrese Halliburton was back to looking like Tyrese Halliburton. Now, you obviously see every play of every game. Is he officially, if we want to call it a slump, and we'll say that for lack of a better phrase, maybe it was injury, maybe it's fatigue, whatever else, but is he officially out of it, or is it still too early to say that?
No, I would say. I mean, if you look at the lab, just looking at some numbers here on my chart, last seven games, he's averaging 20 points, 9 assists, shooting 44% from three. In five of those seven games, he's made three or more. I think, 44% is a really solid number. He's at 38% on the year, and that's down from – he was right around 40% before he hit that, slump, if you will. So I'd have to say that he's emerged from that over the last six, seven, eight games and shot the ball very well.
TV voice of your Indiana Pacers for Bally Sports, Chris Denary, is our guest. Chris, we talked about this a little bit yesterday, and to preface it, I know there's no replacing – a player of the caliber of Buddy Hield and his ability to shoot the ball from beyond the arc. But as you look at where this offense has been post Buddy Hield trade, in terms of where those shots are coming from beyond the arc, have they, for lack of a better phrase, plugged that hole post Buddy Hield where they know where they can count on guys for perimeter access without him?
Yeah, it's been interesting. I was looking at this. The last seven games, they're shooting 42% from three, but they're only making about 11. So if you really look since the trade, they're probably taking less threes than they took when they had Buddy Hield. But then I would argue on the other side, their defense has been better. They've really, in March, their defense was probably a top 13, 14, 15 defense. And some would say, oh, well, that's not top 10, but when you're 29th or 30th, that is a huge improvement. So I think it's been on both ends. I mean, Ben Shepherd has come in and, hit an occasional three, but his defense has been really good. Neesmith, Nembhard, I think the attention to defense has sort of offset that three-point shooting. Doug McDermott is a very capable three-point shooter, but he missed 10 games with a calf strain, so he's now just getting back to where you hope he'll be. So I think it's a little bit of both. They're shooting the three still top 10 in the NBA. They're ninth right now at about 38%. Their numbers have gone down a little bit, but I also think their defense is better, and that's offset that.
Chris, you and I worked the Indianapolis 500 broadcast together. And I've already today used Indy 500 analogies a few times, so I'm going to bring another one into the equation here, okay? Okay. As you know, when we are calling the race, there's a huge excitement in the first like 10 laps, right? And you're watching it, and then you, after the race, you go back and you look at it and you go, you know, the first 10 laps really had nothing to do with how the race turned out, right? I mean, there's so much that can happen. And when Pascal Siakam was acquired by the Pacers, there's so much excitement in the beginning, right? And like, you know, he's and yet everybody's kind of feeling things out, and you don't really know how things are going to equate. It's a 200-lap race in the Indy 500. What lap are we on now in terms of the Pascal Siakam cohesiveness with the offense in general, and the level that they want to be playing with him and everybody understanding each other on the floor with him? Are we at the point where we know where the race is going?
I think so. I mean, I think it's been much improved, and Rick Carlisle has talked about some of the adjustments that Pascal's had to make, and I think that's, you know, they've slowed down a little bit, not a lot. I mean, they're still one of the top fast break teams in the NBA, and they're at their best when they run. But I also think, you know, they had to adjust to him, knowing you have a guy that can get you a basket when you need it. I mean, you can get the ball to him in the post. You can get the ball to him on the wing. He can lead the break. I mean, the guy is just a bucket getter. And I think on the other end, they have seen how helpful he can be on the defensive end. He's become their top rebounder. And I think a lot of that has been the adjustment that he's had to make. Rick Carlisle said, look, we have a whole different defensive scheme than what he endured and played with at Toronto. And he said, I'm not saying one is better than the other. I'm just saying what we do defensively is different than what he dealt with at Toronto. So that's not going to happen where you're going to make those adjustments in game 5 or 10 or 15. But I think where the Pacers are now, he's played 30 plus games. They're getting much closer to where they want to be. And that's, you know, the exact perfect time, because you're 6 games left in the regular season. You're hopeful that you're going to be in the playoffs. I think they're building toward that. So to your analogy, they're very far removed from the first 10 laps. They're not quite, they're probably, you know, 180, 185
okay.
of the 200 laps at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. That's, I don't think they're to the 190 yet, but they're getting closer.
And Chris, what player or players would you say, now that they kind of have a better feel of Siakam's offensive operating areas, what player is most benefiting from defenses now having to shift over to Siakam, and thus that's opening things up for others?
Well, I think you've seen Miles Turner. You know, he's been consistent all year, but I think if you look at his numbers, you know, over the last 12, 15 games, you know, his three-point shooting is good. His ability to get to the rim is good. You know, Halliburton finds him, but there's a little bit more space at times because you've got more attention paid to Siakam, because Siakam can hit a three or he can get the ball and drive to the basket. So I've said this, that Miles Turner, with having Halliburton and Siakam together, you know, those are your number one and number two option. All of a sudden, as a number three option, Miles Turner's sitting there and really doing a nice job. So I would think he's benefited quite a bit from the addition of Pascal Siakam.
Pacers TV voice from Bally Sports, Chris Denari, joins us. Chris, I don't need to tell you this, but you've done this long enough to know high-level basketball when you've seen it. You've also done it long enough to see the sport change as it has from an offensive standpoint over the last 20 years or so. Which of the following, and Pacers official Twitter account posted this earlier today at Pacers on Twitter, which number is more staggering? The fact that Pacers are 20-3 when they score 130 points on any given night, or the fact they've scored 130 plus in 23 games?
That's an interesting number. You hope when you score 130, you're going to win more often than not. I just think the fact that probably 130 points 23 times, they're averaging 122.9, which is the eighth most in the history, of the NBA. So that's, you know, 30 teams right now each year, and let's go all the way back in the, you know, the 75 plus year history of the NBA and how many teams there are, this is the eighth most points that a team has ever scored in one season. So I think the fact that you've, you know, scored 130 plus 23 times is pretty impressive. You hope if you score 130 plus, you're going to win way more often than you lose.
Do you think that is part of the long-term vision of this team, regardless of outside of this year? They want to get better, I'm sure, defensively and find another star to go alongside Tyrese Halliburton. But as long as Halliburton is there, do you think, maybe not eighth best of all time, that's unprecedented territory, but do you think high-level octane offense is going to be an indelible part of their identity in the Tyrese Halliburton era?
I do, and I just think it's fun to watch. I mean, I saw Jake posting last night, he and Shannon and JMB at Hinkle last night watching Indiana State. I watched it as well here in my hotel room. That is fun to watch. You know, what Josh Schertz has done with the Sycamores, and I think what Rick Carlisle has done with the Pacers is very, very impressive. So I just think that's exciting to watch. It's exciting to see transition basketball and ball movement. I mean, the Pacers are averaging 31 assists per game. They've had 35 assists 18 times. And over the last 30 years, I think the only other team that has done it, and they've done it a couple of times, that's Golden State with Curry and Thompson and Draymond Green. So what I've been most impressed about is the ball movement and this team, when it runs, when it plays with pace, and when it moves the ball, they are absolutely fun to watch, and I think that's what people enjoy.
Now, Chris, Shannon has sent several posts since then in text telling people that she went to the game last night with JMV. Now, should I be offended by that?
Is this a worry? I do want to ask this question. You know, because I worked at Butler for so long, and I was there as the marketing director, I remember a few years ago, I went with my son, our middle son, who is a Butler grad, and you could buy a beer at Hinkle. You know, it caught me off guard at first. At the NIT last night, because it's sort of an NCAA-sanctioned event, were you able to buy alcohol at Hinkle Fieldhouse?
Yes. Shannon had a Mick Ultra. Yep.
Oh, yep. Yeah. I mean, that's a wonderful thing that, I mean, it was fabulous to watch on television last night. So I just wanted to make sure that, you know, you were able to enjoy yourself as well.
Jake, did you notice that
she sent a post that JMV bought her a beer? Yeah, she let everybody know.
Jake, did you notice also that Chris, when he was talking to me, he said he, referring to you and Shannon and JMV? I don't know if the order was cryptic there or not, but that's what he did.
I don't know what's going on there, right? Hey, Chris, what areas, look, heading down the home stretch here, right? I mean, obviously, you know, and this is the time of year where you start to look at teams. Sometimes it gets tough because players start resting out if they are out of contention. That is not the case with Indiana. I guess from a health standpoint, as we updated here, what is the latest on Miles Turner? I'll begin with that.
I don't know for sure. They did not have a shoot. They had a walkthrough today. So we'll learn more just prior to the game. Tips off at 7:30. So I think, Rick Carlisle will meet with the media at 6. So, but I saw Miles in the hotel. I'm sure that finger is sore. The good news is as we learned, no break, just a sprain. It is on his shooting hand, so we'll just have to wait and see. But to your point about other teams, I sort of made this list. You're hoping for some help. The Pacers didn't get a lot of help last night because Oklahoma City fell short in Miami, or Oklahoma City and Philadelphia. OKC fell short in Philly, and New York did not win in Miami. And so you're starting to look at some of these matchups that teams have and who will play and who will not play, and that could affect. The other thing you have is, you know, tonight you have Brooklyn, and they're just sort of playing out the string, and sometimes that's scary because they're just playing. Friday you have a team that's battling for the top position in the West in OKC. Sunday, you have a great matchup. You're battling Miami for a playoff position. Then you're at Toronto. They're out of it. Then you're with at Cleveland the following Friday. That's a big game because they're playing for playoff positioning. And then you have Atlanta in the final game. They're without Trae Young, but they're still trying to hold on to a play-in position. So, the good thing, guys, is the Pacers control their destiny. If they win games, they will be at least sixth in the Eastern Conference. They don't have to worry about anything else as long as they win games.
is it understated the fact that, and I know they couldn't control this, but Miami still has a second night of a back-to-back to deal with over this stretch, whereas the Pacers are pretty much clean with a day of rest in the stretch run after every game?
Yeah, no, I think it's big because we know that the Pacers haven't had a great year in the second night of a back-to-back. They're 3-10, even though they won their last one in the L.A. games when they lost to the Lakers and then beat the Clippers. So, yeah, I think that's advantageous for the Pacers, and you hope that that catches up on the Heat. I think Sunday is going to be tremendous. It's going to be a playoff atmosphere, Pacers Heat. There's already that sort of rivalry that dates back 10, 12 years from the Eastern Conference Finals days, but that's going to be a huge game. No matter what happens tonight or Friday night, that's going to be a huge game on Sunday to really determine what happens. I mean, I look at it, if the Pacers could take care of business tonight and then Friday night, they might be able to clinch sixth with a win against Miami on Sunday. Now, that's getting ahead of ourselves, but it tells you how important all these games are the rest of the week.
Chris, I saw the other day, it might have been yesterday, matter of fact, on the flight there, I think it was the two rookies had to sing happy birthday on the airplane over the loudspeaker to, I think it was Jalen Smith's fiance, and then one of the players also had a birthday, maybe Obi
right,
Toppin.
Pascal turned 30.
Okay, Pascal Siakam, there you go. So maybe that tips the hand a little bit on what I'm about to ask. You're around the team away from the game, right? Like, you see them going in and out of the hotel or getting on the plane or practices, etc. From your observation, and I don't mean to put you in a dangerous position here, but from your observation, does in fact Pascal Siakam, away from basketball, look like a guy that is enjoying his teammates because of the fact that now we start to ramp up the speculation as to whether or not he was a long-term guy here?
I think so. I mean, I see him in the locker room. I see him with his teammates, smiling, cutting up, all those kinds of things, on the bus. I just think it's been a very close-knit team, and they welcome Pascal, and I think he was looking for something like that. Again, he is a free agent at the end of the year, but I'm sure Pacers management and he have talked, and this is a place that he wanted to be, to play with Tyrese Halliburton. He said, I wanted to play with Miles Turner. But I think what you saw on social media, Tyrese on the phone or the talking into the microphone, and then the rookies coming up, I mean, that happens a lot. I mean, that isn't just for Pascal. I mean, we've had that before, where the rookies at practice will sing happy birthday or that. So that's the piece that I've really enjoyed about this group. And I think it starts at the top with Kevin Pritchard. It starts with the ownership, of course, with the Simon family. It is a family atmosphere. And I think that comes all the way down to the coaches and the players. And I think everybody is comfortable with that. And so what you see is real. I mean, it's genuine. It's not manufactured. And I think that's one of the reasons why this team has had so much success this year.
TV voice for the Indiana Pacers, Chris Denari, joins us. Chris, the last couple of games, it's been anywhere from excluding, garbage time minutes, for lack of a better phrase, it's been 9 guys in the rotation, 10 in the rotation. I know Miles and his availability might complicate this, but over these final 6, which are effectively playoff games, you mentioned Sunday will be a fantastic atmosphere at Gambridge Fieldhouse, full of playoff atmosphere. But with all of these final 6 feeling like elimination games to some extent to secure a playoff, not a play-in spot, do you think we're getting a preview of what this rotation is going to look like once the high-stakes medal rounds of the playoffs arrive?
Yeah, I think so, and I think you do probably, most coaches will say that you get to the postseason, you don't have back-to-backs, you're game planning, you're making adjustments from this game to that game, and I think most coaches feel comfortable in an 8-9 man rotation. But I think it also depends on personnel and foul trouble. I mean, one of the things that I think has been really good for the Pacers this year is that they have 3 centers. You have to give Miles Turner a breather. If Jalen Smith comes in and gets in foul trouble, and you don't want to have to go back to Miles Turner right away, you've got Isaiah Jackson. I made this note on my chart. In the 30 games that he's played 12 minutes or more, he has 18 double-figure games. And we saw how good he was the other night in the first game against Brooklyn on Monday when they needed him, when Miles couldn't come back after the dislocated finger, and then Jalen Smith got tossed from the game. That's a huge advantage. Now, is he a part of that 9 or 10 man rotation? Maybe not. But if you need to dip that deep into the bench, you've got a guy that you can count on. So I think a lot of it depends on matchups and what you're trying to do. But I think that's been a really good strength of the Pacers this year, that they have a lot of depth. And if you need to go 11, 12 deep, you've got guys that you're comfortable with.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Chris, I'm a huge Isaiah Jackson fan. I think you know that. Just because, like, when his number's called, like, he's always ready, right? That should, like, Lance Stephenson was born ready. His nickname should be Always Ready, right?
Yeah.
Because he doesn't really know when his number's going to be called, but when it is, like, he's just ready to go every time.
I mean, look at Monday night. I mean, he comes right in, 8 points, 3 rebounds, 2 blocks.
Oh, and he had a dunk right away, right, off the baseline. Yeah. I mean, you know, really solid play for sure. Chris Denari, 2,000 games now, right? Is that right?
Yeah, 2,000 with both the Pacers and the Fever. And what the ironic thing is my very first game with Pacer Sports and Entertainment was not on TV, and it was not a Fever game. It was a Pacers game on radio with Slick Leonard. I had just been hired to be the voice of the Fever, and it was the final game of the 2000 regular season, first year in Gainbridge Fieldhouse, then Conseco Fieldhouse. And Al Albert had to miss that game, and they moved Mark Boyle to TV. And I got a call at 10 a.m. in the morning. I was working at Methodist Sports Medicine as their, now Forte Sports Medicine, as their director of sports marketing. And Larry Mago asked me if I could come to the game tonight. And I said, well, sure. I figured it was just to meet people. And he said, well, I need you to do the game. I go, okay. And so, you know, I was the voice of Butler at that point. I had known Slick for a long time. My dad went to college with him, and all day long, all I could think of, guys, was when a 3-point shot goes up by the Pacers, you got to shut up.
That's right.
Because if it goes in, you got to let Slick say boom, baby. And so that's sort of the ironic thing. People know me all the years as a TV voice of the Pacers, TV and radio voice of the Fever, but my very first game for the company was on radio with Slick, and that's pretty cool.
Now, whose job was it to count up to 2,000?
I have people that do that. No, you just go through all your numbers and go, wow, 2,000.
I've tried to figure out races, Chris, and it's gonna be a long time. I'm not gonna get to 2,000. I can tell you that, right? And I try to figure it out, but like there are, and I guess with the NBA, this wouldn't be as hard, but like there are some races that I miss for one reason or another. And then I'm like, man, I can't remember if I did that race. I guess for you, there would be, have you missed any games at all?
I've missed 2 games in my 18 years doing TV. I missed one in 2017 when my middle son got married, and I missed 1 game there. And then right before COVID hit, in fact, here in New York City, I don't know if you remember, I had a kidney stone. And I had a kidney stone and had to go to the hospital on a Saturday, and Pat Boylan flew in to do the game. So I've only missed of all the games that we could potentially do, first and second or first round of the playoffs, regular season, I've only missed 2.
You know, JMV got kidney stones from drinking Big Red Soda. So,
well, I know he's talked about that.
Pat Boylan wants you to keep drinking Big Red Soda.
I used to love Big Red Soda, but I haven't had one of those for a number of
years. Pat Boylan would like for you to keep swigging it, right? Chris, we appreciate it. Enjoy Brooklyn.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right. Chris Denari, the television voice of the Indiana Pacers.